Hi, Mark.
You all right, Chris?
Yeah, I know who it is this week, don't you?
Yeah. No problem.
Don't fluff it.
I won't.
Hello. This week's programme is about... Sorry, I've had a brain fade. There's a lot of it about.
That's part of the whole costing.
Ah, that's right. Natalie Bennett, the beleaguered leader of the Green Party. That was her on the radio this week, stumbling over the detail of her party's election campaign launch.
The cost of 500,000 homes, let's start with that. How much is that going to be?
Right, well, you've got a total cost that will be spelt out in a manifesto.
So you don't know?
No,
you don't, right.
Her interviewer was LBC's Nick Ferrari.
I thought that she was possibly trying to find some papers. I thought that possibly there was even someone alongside her who was trying to give us some figures. And then genuinely, I became a little bit concerned for her because she was so far off the mark.
And basically each £1 spent on this brings back £2.40.
Yeah, but what is the total cost of 500,000 homes?
She was floundering. And you will know, and all your listeners now will know, that in radio, actually, often the most powerful thing is silence. And that silence suddenly made me realise the trouble she was in and also raised concerns for her well-being.
The most humiliating interview ever, said some commentators. Their inability to recall Michael Howard, Chloe Smith, BBC DG, George Entwistle or Ed Balls on business leaders' names, suggesting a similar brain fade on their part. Of course, if Natalie Bennett is looking for any positives from what she calls her terrible interview, at least we all know who she is now. Yes, an Australian, the first non-British-born leader of an English political party since 1922, the only current party leader to come from a science background, and, she claims, the only one who can shear a sheep. Not a lot of call for that in the Commons these days. So how did a sheep-shearing Aussie end up in politics here in the UK? It started age 5, apparently, her young political consciousness awoken when her grandmother told her she couldn't have a bike because cycling was unladylike. Like a red rag to a bull, from that day onwards the gloves were off. In her mind, she could and would do whatever the boys and later the men did. Whether that be riding a bike, fleecing a sheep, or playing cricket.
How is he?
She's very good, apparently. More on that later. She was born Natalie Louise on the 10th of February 1966 to then teenage parents John and Joy Bennett in a working-class suburb of Sydney. Her dad was a trainee carpenter, a mum a secretary. She won a scholarship to an independent girls' school, going on to university in Sydney, where she chose to study agricultural science, something young women didn't tend to do back then. Her fellow student and good friend, Rebecca Harcourt.
It was an interesting course because a lot of people there were sons and daughters of farmers. Mainly the daughters had been sent to find husbands. We had to go and do practical work on farms as part of the degree. And I remember Natalie saying that she went off and had to do some mustering where, you know, she had to get up at the crack of dawn and, you know, you eat a steak for breakfast even though you're not hungry, but, you know, you've got to ride the whole day. And she'd go off the whole day riding with all these blokes.
What sort of work would she be doing on these farms?
I learnt how to castrate calves, which was a good line when you were getting unwanted attention in the pub.
Probably cleared the bar altogether. After university, Natalie Bennett moved into journalism, working on a series of provincial papers in rural New South Wales, where she proved equally forthright, or, reading between the lines, a bit annoying.
She was extremely loud in the newsroom, a big personality and a big voice in a small room.
Tony Gillies was her editor on the Tamworth Northern Daily Leader. Natalie Bennett, a general reporter, who also took on the role of newsroom union rep.
Her personal political compass, I think, was so clearly skewed to the left. I knew where she stood during industrial disputes within the organisation. She was always up for a fight on workplace conditions.
From Australia, she went to Thailand to do volunteer work in women's rights organisations. Then in 1999, she moved to Britain, working as a sub-editor on The Independent, Guardian and Times.
When you first come across Natalie, you don't so much meet her as hear her. She had this piercing buzzsaw of a voice that would really cut across the atmosphere.
Times diary editor Patrick Kidd worked with her back then. He says not everyone warmed to her.
The editor of the Times at that time, when he'd call in after the first edition had gone to press with his changes, would refuse to speak to her because he found her tone insolent, was what I was told. So she had a typical Australian lack of deference.
She was good with a bat, though. It was at the Times where Natalie Bennett honed her sporting skills. In Australia, she'd played rugby and football, forcing her way, she said, into the university team by standing on the pitch and refusing to leave. In England, cricket was more her thing. She became the only woman on the paper's then all-male cricket team.
We had half a dozen games a year and she would play in pretty much all of them. And in fact, after she left the Times, she carried on playing cricket for the Times, probably because the Guardian doesn't really believe in competitive sport. She was the typical Australian wicketkeeper, Gobby. She was not abusive, but, you know, she would always, again, you would hear that voice from 22 yards away very clearly. And she was a very doughty batsman, or batswoman, batter. She had a good technique and she would just stay in and she earned respect. There was one match against the Daily Mail, I think, where she came out to bat with the game to save, number nine or something, and stayed in, making about a six in an hour, just with a very good defensive technique, but barely hitting a scoring stroke. And it gradually wound up the bowler, who bowled faster and faster. What had started as fairly gentlemanly bowling, chivalrous, became full-blooded. And you had to respect her for that.
And by the end, he was lobbing it at her, was he, in the hope of knocking her out, if not getting her out?
Well, I think the fact she used to wear an Australian knitted cricket sweater as well probably got up people's nose. And bear in mind, this was before 2005 and the great renaissance in English cricket, so she had 20 years of sledging the English.
It wasn't just sledging, there were other outside interests too. According to a Who's Who entry, these include cycling, walking, the London Library, baking and conserve making. Surely some mistake. Dogs are a big passion too. She's taken in several rescue dogs over the years. She's been a volunteer at the British Museum in the ancient coin department, as well as a leading blogger on feminism. A friend, the comedian and activist Kate Smurthwaite.
If you'd have asked me, like, you know, what kind of campaigner she was, I would have said she was a feminist. Then I might have added that she cared about, you know, green issues or economics or whatever else. But I would have just, that would have been the first thing I would have said is feminist.
When it comes to socialising, Kate says Natalie Bennett's friends are a diverse bunch. Everything from models to abortion rights activists.
She knows such a wide range of people from so many different backgrounds. It's never the kind of event where there's just a load of politicians. Natalie runs some social events, and it's never what you might expect from politicians. It's always your kind of local dusty floorboards. You know, the pub that's being rejuvenated in the urban area where they've got their own microbrewery on site and they've made their own homemade vegan flapjacks and they're all being handed round.
She also likes to travel. When her student friend, Rebecca Harcourt, moved to London, the pair backpacked their way around Europe, taking in and occasionally drowning out the sights.
The main memory that comes to mind is when we went to Paris together, and I'd been a few times and I spoke, you know, passable French, especially when I'd had a few drinks, and going into a restaurant with Natalie, and she was really making an effort to speak the French that she'd tried hard to learn. And she, you know, she can learn things very easily, but it was just the accent. She just could not get the accent right. And I remember her walking in and going, "Bonjour," in this really strident Australian voice, and the whole restaurant looking around.
Then, in 2006, it was the start of au revoir journalism, bonjour le parti vert. Yorkshiremen can massacre French too. Natalie Bennett deciding to join the Green Party on what she called a whim, a New Year resolution to try to get more involved in politics. She tried and failed to get a seat on London's Camden Council, even stood for Parliament. In 2012, against the odds, she wasn't even the favourite. She was elected Green Party leader. Under her stewardship, the Greens have prospered. Membership significantly up. The party no longer just pro-environment, but anti-austerity too. Natalie Bennett keen to outline ways the Greens would improve people's lives, including what for her is a deeply personal issue, road safety.
And I'm going to add to that list one final policy, one that has a personal angle, one that properly explains why I'm standing before you today. 23 years ago, I was in a car crash in which my mother was killed. Now that for me is a pain that sits in the pit of my stomach I'm sure it will be there for the rest of my life and it won't go away.
It's close friends like Rebecca Harcourt who know how much the trauma of that experience has really affected Natalie Bennett.
Her parents had gone to pick her up from the university to bring her home to Sydney for a holiday, or there must have been something wrong with her car or something. And they were driving back at night. Her mum was driving, her dad was in the passenger seat and Natalie was in the back. And the story is that her mum fell asleep at the wheel, you know, woke up wrong side of the road, overcorrected, the car rolled. And what Natalie had said to me was that she remembers waking up from being asleep in this crash, going to the front of the car, and she said she must have realised her mum was dead because she then went to the other side and dragged her father out. She dragged her father out and the car exploded. So she believed that her mother was dead. That's why she made the choice. But it's just so awful because she was so close to her mum and she really wasn't that close to her dad.
Although she doesn't like to dwell on the detail, the circumstances of her mother's death have clearly had a huge impact on Natalie Bennett's life. It is, suggest her friends, one of the reasons she left Australia for Britain in the first place. Isabel Hardman, assistant editor of The Spectator, has met and interviewed Natalie Bennett a number of times.
Very few people knew about the car crash this week when they were reporting on the interview. And very unfortunately, a lot of people wrote it up using the sort of the metaphor that we always use when these interviews go wrong, which is it was a car crash interview, which must have been really awful for Bennett to have to read those headlines. It's always a difficult calculation for a politician to talk about really painful episodes in their personal lives, but certainly a glimpse of Natalie Bennett, the human, would be useful even if she doesn't talk about the car crash.
Human maybe, but drying up, falling apart on air when the spotlight's turned on her. Since Tuesday's interview, Natalie Bennett has apologised over and over again. She even tried to stop party colleagues intervening to shield her from press questions about her interview.
Would you agree that I'm afraid you're letting your party down performance a bit like that?
She's not going to answer that, OK? Yes. But Caroline... No.
Yes, I will, countered Natalie Bennett. LBC's Nick Ferrari, who was so critical of her original interview, says he's been impressed by her response.
Let's give the woman some credit here. So many times you see politicians, they try and shy away from the truth, or they say, oh, well, what I was trying to say was, or I was misquoted. No, she had the guts to go out and say, it was excruciating, I got it wrong.
Her friend Kate Smirthwaite thinks she'll shrug the whole thing off. It's water off a duck's back, she says.
I think the 21st century feminists are some of the toughest, you know, human beings ever to walk the face of the earth. I think that, you know, that people forget that the side effect of the sort of brutal attacks that people get is that, you know, you get tougher and you can shake these things off. And I think a little bit of a pounding from a radio presenter is nothing that she can't take in her stride.
Where Natalie Bennett goes from here depends on what she does with her newfound notoriety. Will this week's experience get the better of her? Or, says Isabel Hardman, can she turn it to her and her party's advantage?
Well, she's definitely having media training after this interview, and it will be interesting to see whether she does change her voice.
What we're seeing is the politics of hope is rising, and it's triumphing over the politics of fear.
With an election looming, not to mention the prospect of party leader debates on TV, Green supporters will be hoping Natalie Bennett can rise again, looking for hope rather than fear in her own performance.
Profile was presented by Mark Coles and produced by Chris Bowlby.